And I'm especially happy. I have so many friends that came to see me, and that just delights me so much. And some of you, if I've known you in the past, please come and tap me on the shoulder and tell me, because it's real hard for me to, I don't pay attention to faces that much when I'm speaking. But anyway, I'm so delighted to be here. I appreciate the opportunity. These are times that really are trying women's souls, aren't they? Because for the last 4 or 5 decades, we've been seeing a rise in the number of divorces. It's increased from a small amount on up to almost a half, 1 out of 2 these days. And the integrity of the home and of the church and of our families has deteriorated quite a bit. During the 60s, you know, we had the sexual revolution that just changed the way people thought about sexuality and about their relationships in the homes and toward one another, the roles of men and women. And from there, it was the women's rights, the men's rights, the children's rights, and gay rights, minority rights. And everybody that felt like they had been left out in some way wanted to have a movement to help get this going again. But what has happened is that it has continued to change the way we feel about ourselves, the way we feel about being mothers, about being wives, and our role in the church. As more and more women left the home and began working in the workplace, we had more children that were raised in single-parent homes, more latchkey children. We had more children that were being raised in daycares and less influence from the parents than we had ever had before. And we've been having a lot of changes with the women going into the leadership of the companies, being CEOs and managers, and there's nothing wrong with women doing that. But the problem has come about in the churches that because so many women are qualified to be leaders of companies and taking over those responsible positions over men, it has transferred into a problem in the church where we have women that now think, because I'm qualified to do this and because I am talented and I can do this, then I ought to be doing the leadership in the churches. And we have many churches today that I know of that are hiring women to be in some kind of a role in the ministry. You might call them children's directors, and they'll call themselves a minister, and they want to be included in the minister's luncheons and everything. There are a lot of women that are being used in churches that have praise teams and worship teams and singing solos and singing in groups. And there's this influx of women that feel like, I'm so qualified I can do anything in the church, and it doesn't really make any difference. We don't have very many women that are at home anymore to help with VBS. Even for teaching our Bible classes. And, you know, women are wonderful Bible teachers. And so we're lacking in that. We need more women to be able to work and to do some of the things that we have to do in the church. It's time for us to go back to the boundaries of God's Word, to understand what our roles are as wives, as mothers, and as Christian women in the church. And, you know, it's sad to me that so many young mothers or young women in the church have told me, I don't know how to pray. I don't know how to visit. I don't know what you say to people. Would you take me with you when you go somewhere? Because I don't know how to do this. And then we don't have younger women stepping forward saying, well, I'll help with the funerals. I'll help with the preparing the meals. I'll help with the showers. We have some generation gaps in there in the church as far as those who know what to do and are available, and then those that are just not coming along. And I'm going to get into that just a little bit later, but it's time for us to resume the training and to understand what it means to be a woman in the church in the 21st century or in the new millennium, whatever you want to think of it. You know, with the few guidelines that we have, and I can give you 1 Corinthians 15, 1 Timothy 2, 1 Peter 3, and Ephesians 6 are some of those boundaries that God has given us. But with all the guidelines that God has given us about what women can do and stay in the boundaries of God's Word, there's very little restriction. And you know, this is something that we want to look at to understand the levels of authority as God has designed it for the Christian woman. And I want to look in 3 different areas and give you a challenge in 3 areas. First, in the home, to restore our families, and secondly, in the training of our children and grandchildren, and thirdly, as women work in the church. You know, it's no secret, just like I said, that the families have been breaking down. And now we have children that are being raised with one parent and having to be split in their time when they spend it with one parent versus another. That causes them to often be caught into the middle of arguments, or they're caught into situations where they're trying to please one parent over another. One of them gives in on everything and doesn't tell them right for wrong. And so the other parent seems to let go of a lot of the moral teaching and the values because they don't want to be the bad guy in the family. And then even with parents who are staying together with more women working these days, the problem is, who's watching our children? You know, if we look at that, it could really sober us up a little bit to think that, is it just the schools? Is it the churches? Is it grandparents? Is it just a babysitter, daycare center? Is it their friends or the gangs? You know, I have a mentally and physically handicapped child, and he's 29. He's in a group home over in Wichita Falls, and I was calling them on the way down here the other night, Sunday night, and the lady that answered was a new employee, and she said that she had children. And I said, well, how old are they? And she said, well, my oldest just turned 13 last night. I said, who's taking care of them while she takes the night shift? And she said, they're by themselves. And that's typical. That is so typical of so many young families, and they don't have many alternatives. So I'm just saying that as Christian women, we need to be aware that that's what's going on, and that's what's causing a lot of the difficulties that we see with young people these days, and not knowing boundaries of God's law, not understanding moral values. We want to, if you do have to work, plan for someone to watch your child that loves them like you do. And there are some families where the woman does have to work. And I understand that. But at the same time, we have a lot of people that choose to work that don't really have to. And if you don't, choose those children. I can tell you stories from people who say with deep regret, tears in their eyes, I wish I had been there more. One woman said, you know, I was a single mom, and I thought I had to work all the time to support us. And she cried with tears in her eyes in the Bible class last week and said, I wish I had booked myself out. I was a hairdresser, but I thought I had to work every hour that I could. And she said, I didn't eat dinner with my children, and I deeply regret that. And she was just saying to young mothers, watch what you're doing, because someday you may regret what you're doing right now. Excuse me. You know, our children have more leisure time. They're not being supervised. They have access to TVs, VCRs, rental movies, or just buying movies. They're on the computer. They're on the internet. And they can do all these things by themselves, and the parents never know what they're doing. And sometimes it brings tragic results, like it did this last year we saw with the Columbine situation, where the parents were there in the home, but yet they weren't there. They never knew what the boys were doing. And the results were tragic because it resulted in the murder of innocent people as well as the boys' suicide. They were not lacking in money. They had everything they could buy. They had the money to even buy and make those bombs in the home and had been working on them for more than a year, and yet the parents didn't have a clue about this. Were they terrible parents? Well, the news said these are good parents because they were highly educated and they were very well known in their occupations and had good occupations. But they neglected the most important thing, and that was their children. And look what a price that the world has paid because of that neglect. It's time for us to go back to basics and take responsibility for training our own child and nurturing the ones that we bring into this world. You know, it doesn't happen without a lot of preparation, a lot of time spent in loving those children, even when they're so hard to love, but to spend that time in teaching and training them. And we as parents need to understand we're the ones that brought them in, and so it's our responsibility to see that they are trained and trained in God's guidelines. The Bible clearly teaches us. Ephesians 6 and Deuteronomy 6 are two good passages about the parents' responsibility to teach and to train those children. And so I want to look just at a moment at three little facts that we need to remember. First of all, the church is not the one responsible for training our children. You know, in the last few years, a lot of people have attempted to shift that responsibility to the church and say, well, it's the church didn't do anything for my kids, or I didn't like the youth minister, I don't like the programs they have, and they try to shift the responsibility where it doesn't even belong. There is not a scripture for the church being responsible for training and nurturing our children, even though as the church, we are totally, totally involved in and wanting to train the children as much as we have the time with them. But we don't have many hours with the children based on what they have with the parents. Children are so easily entertained that a lot of people fall into the trap of going to a congregation or a religious group because they like what they do with the kids. They like the programs, or they like the youth minister, or they like all the things that they do that keeps them occupied so they're not in their way at home. And that is, there's not a biblical teaching for that kind of thing. Fact two, many of our youth ministers are not well grounded in the scriptures. In 1994, there was an article in Christian Chronicle that came out and said, with an interview of all these youth ministers that have come out of schools, they said, a lot of them don't even know what they really believe doctrinally, and they don't know scriptures, and yet these are the people that we're turning our children over to in the churches. People that don't know what they believe about baptism. They don't know what they believe about the virgin birth. They don't know what they believe about things. And they're the ones responsible for our children. Something's not right with that picture. We need to ask our children, what do you do when you're gone on a youth trip? What are you doing when you're at camp? And what are you doing in the devos? Because entertaining is not enough. And don't get me wrong, our children need to be with other Christian young people, but that doesn't guarantee anything, does it? Sometimes other Christian young people are not behaving as they ought to, and it's just not a guarantee that your children are going to remain faithful just because of what they do at church. The scriptures teach us as parents that we're the ones responsible. Number three, many people are confused about the roles of men and women in the church. You know, youth ministers are sometimes the way that things are beginning to change in the church. And I don't mean to be racking on just youth ministers, but this is one of the areas that has come about in the last few years in the churches that has brought a lot of the changes in the way people are thinking too. If they take the youth off and they say, well, we're going to have a chain prayer and the boys and the girls are both going to lead the prayer, or the girls can just start the songs and the girls can do this and can do that. Well, what happens to those children? They grow up thinking it doesn't matter. It must be a tradition. It doesn't matter to God what we do. And then they want the women to be performing in the worship services because it was okay in the devotionals, and what's the difference? And they say, well, it's not a real assembly. Well, if we're worshiping God at some place, wherever we are, we're two or three gathered together in His name, there He is in the midst of us. I don't get the connection with that. But I believe it's a very tragic thing that so many people today believe that the roles of men and women in the church are simply traditions of men and not scripturally based, because that's absolutely wrong. If it's a preference, then it wouldn't matter who did it. If it's just a tradition, it wouldn't matter. But it matters because God gave us guidelines, and we are to stay within those boundaries of that. And I know women are talented. I know I go to some women's classes, and I just think, you know, like yesterday, Mary Martinez was just fabulous. I enjoyed hearing her so much. And there are women who are very good, very qualified to do things, but that doesn't give them the authority to do it in situations that God forbids. Our culture has challenged women in the idea of keeping silent in worship. And churches through the last few years, and I've known back 15 years ago that some of the churches, the elders were saying, well, we give them authority so they can do it without usurping authority. There's no scriptural basis for that. If God did not give them the authority to do that, the elders have no authority to give authority where it was not given by God. Our scriptures are all from God. I mean, even though Paul wrote most of the writings that we go to know what our roles are, people will often say, well, that's his personal opinion, or that's just the way it was in his culture. And they try to scoot around that, but 2 Timothy 3:16 and 17 says, all scripture was given by the inspiration of God, and therefore it's from God, even though Paul was the one that said it. And 2 Peter 1:20 and 21 tells us that the scripture's not for private interpretation, so you can't just say that's it. Okay, I want to look just for a minute at the roles that, you know, I've just showed you the roles are defined by God, but the second major challenge I want to look at is that mothers and grandmothers can be and should be the ones that are faithful in teaching and training the children. You know, there's no more wonderful opportunity for women than teaching and training children for God. We need to understand that training children is serving the Lord. And I think sometimes early in my life, I would be so overwhelmed with having a handicapped child and one that just got away from me every time I turned around, and then having a baby, and I would just be overwhelmed with being a mother. And then somebody would say, like my husband had said, you know, well, why aren't you teaching? How can I tell people to teach if you're not teaching? And I was overwhelmed personally. I couldn't handle it at the time. Does that mean I wasn't a teacher? No. And I had to work through some of that. And he didn't mean to lay that on me. It's just that he was thinking, well, I got to get back into teaching because I'd already been a teaching. Paul told Timothy that the example that he set in being a leader came from his mother and his grandmother. Now, was his dad involved in teaching and training spiritual things in the home? Absolutely not. We see that women, if they have a husband or not, can teach and train those children. We see that if the husband is involved or not, that women can be successful in teaching and training their children to be raised faithful to God and giving worthy service to Him. And we need to see that in our own local congregations, you will find women who, in spite of tremendous odds, maybe a husband that made it so difficult for her to go to church, and I know one that he was so hateful, and he made it so difficult for her to go. She literally worked for him so she could have her own money to be able to give to the Lord. And her three boys were faithful members of the church. And her husband, to his dying day, never, ever believed in the church or in God. So it is possible. We must not, as women, relinquish our job saying, well, I don't have a husband like you do to help me out. It is our job as mothers and grandmothers to teach and train our children. I have an article that I carried around in my Bible for years and years, so it's old, but it didn't have an author on it. But I want you to listen to this. Will your children go to heaven? Elders all over the country are concerned about the dropout rate of our young people, and well, they ought to be. It's a tragic thing to see the precious boys and girls who were so thrilled with Bible study as little people grow cold and uninterested in the Lord's work as they grow older. Lately, several congregations have done in-depth studies of all the factors available concerning all of their young people, and with an eye to learning what might be done to solve the problem. What do we need? More youth programs, more rallies, special teachers? From the material that has been published on these studies, it seems to me that one great central truth has begun to emerge. The faithfulness of the young person to Jesus does not have anything to do with special programs and teachers. It is not dependent upon whether they are members of a large congregation or a small one. The single most important value is their own immediate family. That's us. One congregation found that where both parents were faithful to the Lord, and that included an active interest in the local congregation, 93% of those children remained faithful. On the other hand, if only one parent was faithful, the figure dropped to 73%. Where the parents would only be reasonably active in the Lord's work, it dropped to 53%. But now here comes the real shocker. In those cases where both parents attended only infrequently, the percentage of children who remained faithful dropped to 6%. Do you want to help your children go to heaven? If you don't help them, they're not going to make it to heaven. You know, somebody a few years ago gave these statistics because it was about when divorce was 1 out of 3, and now it's almost 1 out of 2. But it said, if you were married in a church building, the divorce was only 1 out of 50. I mean, just where you were married. If you studied the Bible and you read together, it's only 1 out of 1,305. Can we do something about what happens in our homes? Of course we can. But how do I begin to train my children? Well, I want to go through this part real fast because I really want to focus on the last part of this. But begin by praying for your children. If you are faithful at praying for your children, I can guarantee you're faithful at training your children, aren't you? Because you love them, you know what's important. We got to begin to pray before they're born and just offer it on a regular basis for the kind of hearts they're going to have and for the kind of person they're going to be and that they'll be dedicated to the Lord. You remember how children are so precious that Hannah just begged God for a child. And she said, if you'll just give me a child, I'll turn him over to you. Well, that's how she saw her child was so precious to her that it had to be dedicated to the Lord. Isaiah 18:8 says, here am I and the children whom the Lord has given me. Children are a gift, aren't they? Now, if you don't believe that they are, when they're yelling and screaming and causing all kinds of problems, just talk to someone who's never been able to conceive and have a baby. Some parents will go to tremendous lengths and spend fortunes trying to have a child because they see them as precious and as a gift from God. Well, what do I pray for my children? Pray that they'll grow up in the Lord and that they will want to become Christians and they'll remain faithful all of their lives and that they will really desire eternal life. You know, with our children, we have to see that eternal life is the most important thing. It doesn't matter if they're the best athlete. It doesn't matter if they're the richest kid at school. It doesn't matter if they're the very best in their grades. It does not matter about these temporary things that we think are so important and we put on such a high value. I've known children who, young people who wanted to get married and the parents said, no, he doesn't make enough money. What do we teach our children? If money becomes the most important thing, are providing your children with enough stuff to be, you know, so important at school, something's wrong with our value system. If we're concerned more about money and power and possessions, then we need to reread in Matthew where he said, where your treasure is, there is your heart also. We need to pray for their children, for our children's friends. Your children are going to spend more time away from you than with you in your life. Now, who's going to influence them? Would it be their friends at school? Is it going to be a gang? Is it going to be the teachers? Will it be grandparents? Will it be just, you know, who is it going to be that's going to influence your children the most? Well, pray for the kind of friends that they're going to have. Pray that they will desire to have good companions. Pray that they will be influenced by the good things that are out there instead of by the wrong people. You know, evil companionship corrupts good behavior. So we need to be really concerned about their friends. Then we need to pray for them to respect authority. And women, it begins at home. If you do not train your children to respect you as an authority in their life, they will never respect anyone. We need to pray that our children respect, and we've got to teach them this, to respect parents, to respect grandparents, to respect older people, to respect the schools, the teachers, the churches, the church leaders. We need to teach them to respect the government. If we fail at this, they're going to have a hard life, and they're going to cause a lot of problems because all of us are responsible to someone, aren't we? And we need to quit blaming teachers and principals when our children are caught in wrong behaviors. If they're wrong, don't go run to that school and chew them out for getting on to your child. And I'm telling you, this is one of the biggest fears that teachers have today. It's what's going to happen if I get onto this child and the parent comes in. Because the parents will go after the teachers faster than anything. So we need to open our eyes and understand that if our children are not respecting authority, they're going to have lots of problems. We need to pray, fifthly, for the spiritual that we don't promote the spiritual degeneration of evil men. And I got this from 2 Timothy 3, verses 1 through 7. And listen to this and see if it applies to us. But know this, that in the last days perilous times will come, for men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of the good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power. And from such people turn away. For of this sort are those who creep into households and make captives of gullible women, loaded down with sins and led away by various lusts, always learning and never able to come to the knowledge of truth. You see, good and bad traits start early in life. And when our children grow up and they're self-centered and they're headstrong and they don't have parents that love them enough to control them, they're going to be impossible for others to live with too. Pray that when your children are wrong, you will have the strength of character to correct that child and teach them a better way. It's really sad when everybody else knows what children get away with murder and the parents never think their children do anything wrong. Number six, pray that your children will be responsible in their attitude in their relationship with other people. Romans 12 says that we're to be not to be conformed to this world, to be transformed by the renewing of our minds, that we may prove the good and acceptable will of God. We need to take much care in training them not to conform to the evil that's in our society, but to be transformed and rise above some of the things that are really wrong in our world. You know, it only takes one generation to lose them from the Lord, but we can go back and retain those people if we'll go back for that generation. Number seven, pray that your children will know right from wrong. We have to hate evil. Romans 12:9 teaches us to abhor what is evil and cling to what is good. What do your children know that's good? And what do they know that's evil? Do they really understand that everything's not gray anymore? I mean, our society promotes everything as a gray issue. It really doesn't matter. But Hebrews 5 teaches us that we learn to discern good from evil by practice. First Timothy 4 teaches us that we can sear our conscience and be led away, be seduced by the devils, be weaned away from what's right just a little at a time. And I would say that's what the church is in right now. We're in a state of where the frog is in the pan, and so many changes have come about just a little at a time until we may not even recognize things have changed. As far as our morals are concerned, if you went back 20 years, would you hear God's name taken in vain? It was against the law. Would you see all of the things that are on TV now? No way. We would have called it pornography, wouldn't we? We just didn't accept the bad behavior that is acceptable today. So we need to take time to make sure what our children are feeding their minds on. And we need to pray that we will teach them right from wrong, because they can see it modeled in our own lives. You need to pray for your children's mates and begin this early in their lives, because you want them to be able to find someone that they could spend the rest of their lives with, and the two together can help to be strong in the Lord and raise children that are strong in the Lord. Number 9, we need to pray for your children to love the church that Christ died for. You know, Matthew 16:18-20 said, I will build my church. And today we have a lot of people that want to change that to where it's entertainment, and that's no longer God's church or Christ's church, is it? Ephesians 1:22 says that Christ is the head of the church. Ephesians 4 says there is one church, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one hope. True worship cannot be to please men and still be right with God. What pleases God has to be the focus of our worship. And John 4:24 teaches us to worship in spirit and in truth. And so we need to be careful about how we love the church enough to uphold what God says. Number 10, you want to pray that they're faithful to the end. You don't want them to be tempted and drawn away by their desires, but you know the temptation comes from our own lust, as James teaches us. But in 1 Corinthians 10, we're taught that no temptation is uncommon to man, and that he will provide a way of escape if we just want that. So teach your children bad things are going to happen. Let them know bad things are going to happen, but it's a way to test their faith. And not be shocked that, oh, something bad has happened. It's so unfair. Life is unfair. Life is unfair. Bad things are going to happen. Now, how are you going to deal with it? Are you going to go prepared with armor of God to know how to face some of the things that are going to happen? Number 12, pray your children will understand forgiveness and that they will forgive others. You know, they're so sad to see people in the church that get so mad, they hold grudges, they leave the church because they're angry at someone. You can't go to heaven that way. And we need to learn to forgive one another. Sometimes grudges are held over things that the person that they were mad at never even knows that they did anything wrong. It's wrong to do that. But we need to teach them that their forgiveness is based on how they forgive others. And then we need to forgive ourselves. When God has forgiven us, we don't have to go around the rest of our lives carrying the weight on our shoulders. Now, the third challenge that I have is to me, oh, no, wait a minute, let me go back. 13, pray that your children will teach others about God. I come from a congregation in Lawton, Oklahoma, where our children are taught how to teach others from an early age. We take teenagers out door knocking, and I'm going to tell you a little more about that in a little bit. But our children bring their friends from school to church. They sit down as teenagers and teach those people, and they're baptized. And then they bring people, and they're baptized, because it's an everyday thing. Are your children teaching the Bible to anyone in your congregations? If they're not, do they see it modeled? If you don't, then you know where we need to start. We need to start with teaching them how. The third major challenge that I want to focus on, though, is on women serving in the churches. We do need to understand the different lines of authority that God has given us. You know, even in when Christ was on this world, he said, I didn't come to do my will, but the will of my Father who sent me. In Philippians 2, it says that Christ was obedient to his Father. He didn't come to do his own, what I want to do. He came because he had a mission, and he had a mission from God. Ephesians says that Christ is the head of the church, and man is head of the woman, and there is one church. There's one Lord, one faith, one baptism. Matthew 16:16-18 teaches us that Christ said, I will build my church. Now, that's the church we want to focus on today. God is over Christ. Christ is over man. And man is over woman. And yet, keep in mind the lines of authority there. And it's like an umbrella of authority, as someone once said. If you as a woman decide you want to do something that you have been forbidden to do, guess what? You've moved yourself to the very top over God. Now, that's scary, isn't it, to start thinking of it like that, to understand that those lines of authority are there. God gave us those lines of authority. Even in some churches where elders have said, well, the women have permission to get up and to, they're going to read the announcements and they're going to wait on the Lord's table and they're going to do these things. They didn't have the authority to do that. The elders have moved themselves and the women above God, above Christ. And so we can't follow that. 1 Timothy 2:11 and 12 teaches us that woman is not to usurp authority over man, and we're not to, that means with or without permission, you still aren't going to do it. You know, some churches contradict this today, though, and it's just not what God desired for us to do. If women decide they're going to teach in a class that's mixed with men and women, that she's taking the leadership role there because she is over that class. With or without permission, she's still done it. First of all, though, I want to talk about women can work in the church without violating scriptures. There's a desperate need today, this very day, for women to be the teachers. They're wonderful teachers. I mean, some of our favorite teachers that we can think of in Bible classes were women, weren't they? Because they loved us. They made it exciting. They created all this neat things to help us remember the story. Titus 2, verses 3 through 8 is familiar to all of us, but it's not practiced very often, and that's that older women are to teach the younger women. Well, guess what? You're older than somebody, aren't you? Every one of you in here can set an example and teach somebody else. How much time?
Well, you said 30 minutes.
Oh, okay. I don't have a lot of time. We need to be sure that as women, though, that we are reaching out to those that are younger. Teach them how to minister to the sick. Teach them how to go visit. Teach them how to pray. Teach them how to teach their children. Because the scriptures teach us that older women are to teach younger women to love their husbands and to love their children. Oh, I thought they did that automatically. No. That's something that is trained. And if you don't believe that, look at how many homes have fallen apart and people have abandoned their children and don't care about them or put them in places if they're handicapped and never see them again. It's really sad. Secondly, women are needed in youth programs. And I talked to our youth minister about what can women do that would help you. And he said they can do the preparation for youth activities. And if it means that they're going to be away from home overnight, there's a lot of preparation that has to be done in preparing places for them to go. Help plan the events, decorate for them. They can help with setting up the Bible studies with teenagers and their friends, training them at home. And here's what we need to train our children at home: to have spiritual values, teach them courtesy, and proper behavior during worship and classes, and then support the teachers when they must correct your children. We can get involved in so many ways when our kids are teenagers and then not see it as a way to get away from all the disruptive things that they're doing in our lives, but to be involved in them, because the more you're around them, the more you're going to see their behavior, the more you're going to have an influence over them. And if they're under your feet, then you are going to be able to know what they're doing. And sometimes when they're away from us, we may not know. We need to teach younger people to care for older members, don't we? We need to teach them to go in and to help someone without expecting to be paid, to do jobs that maybe somebody is at home and unable to do. And then they can help with the youth programs of young marrieds by babysitting for free so that young couples can get together and learn how to be involved in the church better. I think it's one of the most important things. Women are needed in church-related activities. Look at the scriptures to see what women did. In Acts 9, we had Dorcas, and what'd she do? She used her sewing talents to provide clothes for people that needed them. Lydia helped in teaching and reaching others. Priscilla helped her husband to teach a gospel preacher more fully what he didn't understand. Mary learned that spiritual growth was more important than the things that had taken Martha's attention away, the everyday task. We need to keep the right focus and not let the daily physical task take preeminence from us. You know, and it's hard, isn't it? We plan a dinner, we have to have a lot of preparation to feed people, but yet we don't want that to be the focus of what we're doing. We still want the spiritual things. We need to have practice hospitality, don't we? Hospitality is a forgotten thing, and yet it's so important. It was listed as a qualification for an elder's family, and it's also a qualification for even helping the widows. We, as Americans, are some of the most blessed and most selfish with the possessions that we have. You know, we don't want people to come in our homes when we get it a little bit nicer because they might mess it up. Or we don't want to clean it up. We don't want to be bothered with it. And so we need to be looking for ways that we can be more involved in hospitality. We need people involved in teaching and training younger people how to prepare food for funerals. We just realized at home that most of our older members are the ones that were preparing for funerals, and some of them are in their 80s and very difficult to stand on their feet, but they're there. They are there. And the youngest on the food committee was 50. So guess what? When I go back home, we're going to have some classes to figure out how we can incorporate the younger ones better. And it don't assume that because younger women are not involved, it's because they don't want to. And that's what we assume a lot of times. They may never have been trained how to do it. Their mothers may have been the ones working. They didn't set the example. They may never have had anyone take time to show them what to do or even ask them, would you bring food? This is how much I need you to bring. So make sure that when you're planning showers and the foods and all those things, that you involve younger women and show them how. You know, Matthew chapter 25 talks about if we offer a food or drink in the Lord's name, we've done service unto Him. And in the prisons, we can offer to teach Bible correspondence class if you're not where you can go into a prison. In fact, Jeffrey Dahmer was converted before his death because one woman wrote him a Bible correspondence course and then got a preacher involved in that. We need to pray for opportunities. Don't overlook the little things. That's what we overlook sometimes. We think, well, we're only important. We're only doing something important if we're the ones in front of people, if we're the ones that everybody knows to come and pat you on the back. And although I love speaking, I see the jobs that are going on behind the scenes as more important than what I might be doing, because it takes a lot of work, and a lot of people are just busy doing things that no one knows that they're doing. Your neighbors may be lost and may be looking for help. Please learn how to teach them the Bible and sit down and study with them. Be so focused on heaven that it absolutely controls your life. You know, when Jesus told those first people that were listening to him on the Sermon on the Mount, he said, if you'll seek first the kingdom of heaven, everything is going to be provided for you. They didn't have drive-ins. They didn't have grocery stores. They didn't have pantries full and overflowing and still go, well, I don't know what I want. They didn't have anything, okay? They were still focused on Jesus, and he provided the daily bread that they needed. Women must be evangelistic. And this is what I wish I could spend more time on, too. Women are some of the best evangelists in the church. At Northwest, we have from teenagers to women in their 80s that are, well, we have men too, but we have a lot of women that are involved in teaching the Bible. They sit down. I mean, you have a visitor in that congregation. I used to be the one that caught the visitors where I've lived everywhere before, but I can't even get to them anymore because they've already been asked by two or three people before I even get to meet a lot of them. Will you study the Bible with me? And they do, and we have constantly conversions. We have our elders take about 50 of us once a year to some town, and we knock every single door in a town. And if they're not home, we may go back two or three times to try to reach every person. We don't want to knock the door and run, you know, leave a brochure on the door. We want to say, hi, we'd like to know if you'd like to study the Bible. And then we go back and sit down and study. Last year, we had 50 baptisms in the town of Ada, where we went to do our last year's campaign. Women are great. They're so evangelistic. But what our elders are noticing is that the more women are going to work, the fewer women there will be to help do some of these things. And remember that women's roles are different from men's, but it should be a compliment to you. Isn't it wonderful that God provided that man is to be responsible for the spiritual leadership of the home? If it isn't happening because of what he does, he is going to be held accountable. But if you're not doing your part, you'll be held accountable too. But God has made man ultimately responsible for that. Isn't that great? He could have dumped it all on us, couldn't he? And a lot of women think they're dumped on anyway. They think, well, my husband doesn't do much. Well, hello. You know, there are so many things that we as women can do that's going to be wonderful in the work of the Lord, and yet not focus on the one restriction. You know, if we start saying, well, I don't think it's important unless you're up leading, then we have done exactly what Eve did. Eve was provided every blessing she could ever, ever want. And she had only one restriction. And what did she do? She broke that one restriction. Are we doing the same thing that Eve did when we say, well, I can't. I know I'm not supposed to do some of this, but I'm going to do it anyway. I think I'm more qualified. Well, I think I can lead a better prayer. Or I really have a good voice and I'd like to lead the singing. If we're doing that, ladies, we are violating scriptures and we have gone contrary to God's will. God blessed us. He did not put all those things on us. He allowed the men to have to be responsible for so many things. Elders are men, and they have to be responsible for the sheep. And I'm thankful I will never be an elder. I think it's a tremendous responsibility, and we do not give them enough credit. Much of the work that is done in the church would not be done if it weren't for women. Women are truly the backbone of what gets done. But when you want to take leadership where God didn't give it, then you're out from under that line of authority. So always remember that, the line of authority that I was just talking about. We need to teach each other and hold fast to what we believe, and then to encourage each other, as Hebrews 10 says. And with an emphasis on godly life, let us as women go forward with our heads held high, knowing that we're pleasing God and not man, and by conforming to God's way that we may look forward to eternal life. And the main women, you know, that women may be seeking leadership roles would be the result of pride. And, you know, the scriptures teach us that God hates the proud and he exalts the humble. When our lives fit God's pattern, women have plenty of work to do without looking around for ways to serve God that's contrary to his will. And I would just say to you that God blesses each one of you that are looking for ways to serve the Lord that's within his guidelines. And as we look, there are so many opportunities. I couldn't even begin to mention all of the ways that we can serve. But let's learn to be servants first. Pray for those opportunities, because opportunities are everywhere. And if Jesus were here today, he would say, look, the fields are widened to harvest. You've got hairdressers. You've got sales clerks. You've got neighbors. You've got people in nursing homes. You've got people that are sick. You've got people that have just moved in this community. Go after them. Go teach them. Help them to become a Christian, and so that it can someday be said of us, like it was of the woman who anointed Jesus' feet, she hath done what she could.